All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. I'll give you a quick heads up and then we'll get started. Today is general questions, anything goes. We're either going to record 1 or 2 hours, depending on how many calls and questions we have. And I'll tell you right now, both are really light. Calls are just starting to roll in right now. Questions are really light, so this is your opportunity. You've got a question, a comment, a topic about anything at all you want to talk about today, press 1 on your phone if you haven't already done that, and we will get to you. I promise if you do it right now, I will get to your call. The longer you wait, I always say this at the beginning, that we don't have a lot of questions, and then by the end, I don't get to everybody, but today would be your chance. So we'll get started, and I'll keep you updated on whether or not we're going to do 1 hour or two today. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone. Give me a call. We'll talk about it here on the air. It is tax time. I've been telling you that for a while. It's not going away. You've got to do it. Just know that if you file an extension, and if you want to use a good tax preparer who works just in the trucking industry, there are some around. There's a couple things. It takes a little longer because you're usually going to do this through the mail and over the phone. That's how we work with 99% of our clients. And that's how most people who specialize in drivers and owner-operators work, because there just aren't that many of them around. You're not going to find one local. And that's going to take a little extra time. And I know we're really busy. There will come a time where if you get your stuff in after that date, we'll either be just shutting down the service for a little while or we'll tell you you're going to get an extension. So time is running short. Get your stuff together. Get it in. Get your taxes taken care of. But just know, if you file an extension, that is only an extension of time to file, not to pay. So if you owe tax, and if you don't have your tax return done, you're not going to know whether you owe or how much. But if you do, on April 15th, whether you file an extension or not, you are going to pay interest tax not paid in full by April 15th. Now, I'm not telling you don't bother with an extension, because if you don't file the extension, you'll pay even more penalties for not filing on time. But an extension is only an extension of time to file. There is no way to get an extension of time to pay. You will be charged interest and penalties on any unpaid balances starting on April 15th. Actually, if you're self-employed, they could charge you for the whole year if you weren't making quarterlies. So the sooner you get this taken care of, the less it is going to cost you. So get that done. Don't put it off anymore. We're going to get right to some phone calls tonight. I had some other things, but I see we've got some Paul's waiting, so let's get to him. Let's head off to Kentucky. Steven, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Hey, I've been a long-time listener. I appreciate everything you've done. I've been an owner-operator for 18 years or so, but now I have this Kenworth of mine that I'm customizing the truck and the trailer. And what I want to know is I want to do this as no commercial hauling, anything. I'm not going to do any more hauling with this truck and trailer. The only thing this thing is going to do is going to be for show. And what I have done, I've filled out an MCS 150. They, I faxed it. They sent it back to me. I pulled up my DOT number. It's registered in the database for the, you know, DOT. And my question is to you is how do I make sure I'm in compliance as far as moving this truck around in Kentucky or whatever, because I need to get this thing to a couple of places for paint and other stuff. And I just want to know, do I need to have a weight plate tagged to this thing for the truck and the trailer and insurance?
Well, this is different in every state, and the two things that you mentioned are the two things that you kind of have to deal with. And other than those two things, I've never dealt with anything else. And I've used my trucks over the years for lots of different non-commercial reasons. There was a time 20 years ago I had a good-sized boat, and I would take a couple big trips every year, and I had a hitch set up on my tractor, and I'd pull the boat with it. And when I did, all I did was cover all the commercial markings and go. I didn't worry about anything else. Now, that truck already had insurance and a base plate. I didn't worry about anything. Now, for the last, you know, over the last 7 or 8 years, we've used a tractor to pull an RV. And I've had that, I've had them titled in Ohio, Florida, Washington, and Oregon. And it was different every single time. And many times, nobody even at the license bureau knows what to do. Oregon was the worst. I'll bet we spent 6.5 hours at the license bureau trying to figure out how they were going to plate this thing. And then you spend time on the phone with the insurance companies. Legally,
yeah, that was the biggest
there
thing.
Doesn't...
I did fail
yeah,
the same way
legally,
you did. I went through that.
There doesn't seem to be a lot that you have. You know, I've... In most states, there really is no CDL requirement because it's not a commercial vehicle. There are a couple states that I think if it's over a certain size, they have a requirement, but nobody ever seems to enforce it. And you have yours anyway, and I just kept mine. So that's never an issue. But in all the years of driving the truck around non-commercially, I've never gone over a scale, and nobody has ever questioned me about anything. So
even
there could be some requirements out there. Yeah, even with the trailer. We never pulled into the scales. Nobody ever bothered us. It was just never a problem. So really,
yeah, they
if
told
you
me
get a base plate.
Pounds or less. They told me 26,000 pounds or less, I should be fine in Kentucky.
Well, see, that 26,000 pounds, though, is commercial.
Right.
But you're not commercial.
Right,
just
that's
a private,
what I told them
just,
ahead,
yeah, that's what they never, well, that's what they don't seem to get. Every time they look up your vehicle, they say, but it's a commercial vehicle. It's just a vehicle. I could go drive, buy this thing and drive it around to the grocery store if I want. There's no law against that. It doesn't become a commercial vehicle until I use it for a commercial purpose. And the people in, you know, local government seem to have a hard time understanding that, but they never seem to have any answers for you either. So you just do what you have to do to get a plate on it, so you're legal with the plate. Do what you have to do to get insurance on it. And other than those two things, I never do anything else. I have insurance, I have a plate, and I just drive it. And
yeah,
nobody's ever questioned me about anything.
Yeah, I just don't want to get it to a point I'm going, like I said, I'm not going too far from home, but I just don't want to get it to a point where I get pulled over by the DOT and they're like, well, your paper, you know, you're not right as far as, you know, your paperwork, and now we're going to set the truck up on the record to impound or wherever they decide they want to do it.
You know, like I said, we were full-time for 3 years. We were all over the country, lots and lots of miles. We were, you know, 70 feet long. I had a smart car up on the back of the tractor. You know, we stood out, and we never once got questioned about anything.
Okay, now my last question is, even with the insurance, how would I, because I've been having a problem even with my insurance about tagging this thing, you know, they's like, well, we had to go through a different company through us to insure, and then that's the thing. Well, is it a commercial vehicle? And I said, the truck used to be commercial. It's not going to do any hauling. It won't haul
yeah.
one crop.
Don't Don't even say that. Don't even say that anymore. When you call back, and you just have to talk to people until somebody says, okay, we're going to put a policy on it. We've jumped through this hoop so many times, there's no easy answer. The time you get somebody on the phone, it's going to be different. But my goal, I was going to get somebody on the phone that was going to write a policy. Once I had a policy, all I cared about. They are now, you know, under contract to cover this vehicle. I didn't lie to them. I told them the truth. Here is the type of vehicle, but it is completely non-commercial. It's never going to be commercial. I'm just driving it around for personal use. And I just had to stay on the phone. I say I, Lisa did all the calls. But I know how many times she had to jump through hoops. And she would just persist until somebody said, okay, here's how we're going to do it. And we did. We were with Progressive. They handed us off to one of their sister companies, and they wrote it. But the goal is just get a policy on it, and once you do, then you're fine.
Thank you, sir, so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I do know, though, there is nothing easy or standard about this. Nobody knows, whether it's the license bureaus, the insurance companies. It freaks them all out because they look up the vehicle and they say, wait a minute, that's a commercial vehicle. It's not a commercial vehicle. It's just a vehicle. It only becomes commercial if I use it for a commercial purpose. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's head off to Minnesota. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I listened to Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover quite a while ago, and I was sitting down with my wife to discuss his plans, and she asked me a question I didn't really have an answer for, and why does he suggest doing the debt lift in order of cost versus interest, because she wants to pay the higher interest off first.
Really good question, and I'll try to give you the best answer I can, and I've worked this out mathematically many times. So if people want to make a truly mathematical argument about this, you probably could. But it really comes down to usually not a lot of difference either way. So if you wanted to make the truly mathematical argument that we could pay a couple dollars less if we knock out the highest interest rates first, that you could make a good point there. But if you do the math, it's not even that big, and it doesn't always work. But the more important thing is the psychological factors, because paying off debt gets very emotional, money gets emotional, and most people fail at it. They want to pay it off, and they keep struggling, and they don't. So Dave has come up with a system that works much better psychologically. And because it works better psychologically, you actually end up paying things off faster, and in reality, you end up paying less in interest overall. Here's a good analogy from the stuff I teach. if we look at speed, fuel mileage, and revenue as a purely mathematical formula, you could make an argument that, well, of course I'm going to drive faster because I get more miles, and the more miles I get, the more money I make, and that will pay for the extra fuel. You could make a mathematical argument. In the real world, it never works.
Right.
We've done it over and over and over, and slowing down, this is kind of the same thing. You could make a mathematical argument that paying the highest interest cards first makes more sense, but in the real world, using his strategy works better. He talks about building momentum, and you get that sense of satisfaction. So let's just use two cards as an example, just to keep it simple. Most people, when you start to pay down debt, you're usually dealing with 5 to 10 different loans. But let's just talk about two. And let's talk about one that is $5,000 and one's $500. And we set a goal, we're going to pay this off. And the one that's $5,000 has a higher interest rate. So we're going to start on that one first. And, you know, we can pay $100 a month. Now think about how long it's going to take you to pay off that $5,000 card, and that $500 card is just sitting there doing nothing. Or it's getting the minimum payment, which means we're never really making any headway on it. And after 6 or 7 or 8 months, you don't feel like you've gotten anywhere. You still have two credit cards. Neither one of them is paid off. You're still getting two bills every month. You still have to write two checks every month. And there's no sense of accomplishment. On the other hand, if you put the $100 a month towards the $500 bill, in 5 months, it's gone. Now I only get one bill every month. Now I only have to write one check every month. And I actually feel like I accomplished something. So it keeps me motivated to move to the next one. And the motivation usually gets people to put a little extra towards it each month. They see this card disappeared, then this card disappeared, and they get excited. Now they have more money to put towards the next card. That's the other part of the formula. Remember, once you wipe out a card, so let me kind of explain the formula a little bit to everybody so they know what we're talking about. If we had 5 credit cards to pay off, and these could be loans of any kind, car loans, credit cards, personal loans, mortgage, whatever. We have these debts that we have to pay. So to start this, Dave calls it the debt snowball. The way you do this is you take and you lay out all the cards and you put them in order, smallest balance to biggest, and you on the first one is the one we're going to attack, the smallest balance. So on every other debt, we pay the absolute minimum. We don't pay anything except the minimum so that we don't get hit with penalties or anything on those. And we take all the extra money we can find and we put it towards that smallest debt. And we usually wipe that one out pretty quick. Now you take everything you were paying towards that debt and start on the next one. Then when that one's gone, so that number that you keep applying to the debt gets bigger and bigger every time you wipe a debt out. But if you start with the biggest one, you're going to be working on it for a very long time before you can put any money towards the next one. Does that all make sense?
Yes, it does. That gives me something to explain to her and understand it a lot better to myself. So thank you very much for your time, Kevin. That's all I had for today.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah, that's a great topic and a great book, by the way. Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover. If you are looking to get your finances in order, so you've got some debt, maybe you're not saving money and you know you should be, maybe you don't have a retirement account. Basically, you're like most Americans today, you're living paycheck to paycheck and you don't really have a financial plan. The best book to start with is Total Money Makeover. Great book. If you kind of get through that book and you pay off your debt and you have an emergency fund and you're doing some savings and you really want to learn financial strategies, long-term, lifetime financial strategies, the book I recommend is called Money, Master the Game by Anthony Robbins. Now, I will tell you, Total Money Makeover is a pretty easy read. Dave has some great techniques. He's got simple, really proven techniques that work. They're easy to understand, not easy to implement. That's the tough part. They're simple to understand. They're not easy to implement. If they were, then everybody would be debt-free and they'd have savings and retirement and all that stuff. But they're not. But they are easy to understand. It's an easy book to read. Then you have to do the hard work. On the other hand, Money, Master the Game, not quite such an easy read. Or the strategies that are in there, pretty high-level strategies, Tony does a pretty good job of making it as easy to understand as possible. It's not nearly as confusing as listening to many financial planners try to explain this stuff to you, including myself sometimes. He put a lot of work and a lot of effort into the book to make it clear, and yet there are strategies in there that will literally last you a lifetime. To give you an example, back in the late 90s, I decided I wanted to become a certified financial planner, which is the highest designation in the financial planning field. I went back to school for 3 years while I was still working and driving and running another business, an accounting business. And I did this for two reasons. One, I wanted to learn as much about money as I could. And two, I wanted to be able to help my accounting clients with their retirement accounts and you know, 529 college plans and all those other things. So 3 years of school, the craziest exam I've ever seen in my life. If I remember right, it was 15 hours for the exam. And I'm pretty good at taking tests. I'm actually really fast at taking tests. I'm usually the first one done. I look at a question, I either know the answer or I don't, and I move on. And it took me every bit of the 15 hours to finish that exam. It's one of the most difficult things I've ever done. After 3 years, all that exam, all that stuff, all that learning, all that reading, I wish I would have skipped all that and just got this book. This book has better advice and better strategies than I learned becoming a CFP, and better advice or strategies than I've heard from any financial planners I've ever talked to. Now, Anthony Robbins isn't a financial planner. He's just a really smart guy. And he interviewed, if you wanted to know about really being wealthy and financially successful and financially secure, don't you think you should probably interview people who have done that? And that's what he did. He went to the top, some of the most successful financial people in the world, and they put together just an amazing book. So between those two books, I'm not sure what else you need when it comes to money. In fact, I've read a lot of books about money and finance, and honestly, if you read those two, you will know more about money, investments, retirement accounts, savings, all of the topics around money. If you read those two books, you would know more than 99% of the population in the country. And they're both available on audio, so you can listen to them while you drive. Stick around. We'll be right back. We'll get to more of your calls and questions right after this. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's go to Washington this time. Daniel, welcome to the program.
How are you doing today, Mr. Rutherford?
Doing wonderful. What can I help you with?
I'm at a new place, and actually I like it. I'm in a truck for the first time ever that does not have a governor. I will admit, I went just to see how fast it would go, and yes, it does. Immediately after, it's like, you know what? I don't want to go that fast because I looked at the instant fuel mileage on the dash, and it's like, oh, no. I might be company, but because I was tracking my fuel mileage in the last truck I was in, I'm very much in the trying to get the best mileage possible mentality, and going fast just is an amazing contradiction to that. And
yes, absolutely. Well, good for you.
Right now, let me bring up the number. My average with this truck is 5.09 miles to the gallon.
Ouch.
That's my average. Yes.
Ouch.
The truck seems.
What year is this truck?
It's 2011. With
okay.
A 2009 model year, ISX Cummins, 400 horse, with just the DPF on it and the EGR. So,
okay.
And I've been looking to see what I can do to make my mileage go up. This past tank, I'm doing the best that I've had, and I'm up to 6. Woo! I know, it still sucks.
Well, here's the thing. That is a huge improvement, and I sometimes think people fail to understand that or see that. You know, if I have somebody call me and they're getting 9, and they get it to 10, we would be writing a book. I mean, we would be talking about it all over the place. It would be big news. But when you go from 5 to 6, that's a much, much bigger accomplishment. Now, getting 10 is a big accomplishment. There's no question. But the whole point of this, for me, has never really been about getting the best fuel economy I can get. It's always been about putting the most money to the bottom line. And you took a truck from 5 to 6 and didn't really spend any money doing it. That's a huge return on investment. Most people who could take a truck from 9 to 10 would spend thousands of dollars to do it, and the savings aren't as big, not even close. And the other thing that just happened is when a truck gets 5 miles to the gallon, and we're not too worried about this right now because fuel is cheap, but if fuel goes to $5 a gallon for some reason and a truck is getting 5 miles to the gallon, it is no longer profitable to run that truck. But if you're getting 6, just exactly 6, not even 1/10 of a mile per gallon more, if you can get exactly 6, then the fuel price becomes irrelevant. It doesn't matter if it goes to $10 a gallon. That 6 mile per gallon truck still makes the same amount of profit as when it was $2 a gallon. That's the whole point of the fuel surcharge. Now, if it goes to $10 a gallon, the 9 mile per gallon truck is going to be making a fortune because the fuel surcharge becomes a bonus. But that change that you made from 5 to 6 is the biggest change you're ever going to make with the biggest financial impact. So congratulations. That's impressive. I hope your company
60.
Appreciates it.
They don't care. It's all me on this one. And quite frankly, I can't. It's like getting an error code on a computer. It's like nope, can't go that fast. I mean, out west I'd go 67, just so I'm not run over. But I hit a state where the speed limit was 60, and the mileage just kind of really jumped up.
Yep.
Now, since I'm company, but I'm being paid like I'm an owner-operator, I'm being paid on a W-9.
You mean a 1099?
I'm sorry, 1099. My bad. I know I'm going to have to start filing quarterlies, and there's a whole bunch of other tax implications as a result of that. And I'm wondering, I heard somewhere like take 30% out of your paycheck and just file that away every week. Does that sound about right?
Well, it can't hurt. It's probably going to be a little high, but I would start there. If you have the ability to set aside 30%, then do it, because having too much money set aside is never a bad thing. We do know that right off the bat, you could knock off your per diem, because we know that's deductible. That's $63 a day. You can knock that off your paycheck because you won't have to pay tax on any of that money. Then you can calculate 15% for Social Security and Medicare. Those are the two easy numbers that we already know. We know how much per diem is. We know how many nights you are gone. We can calculate that. We know that Social Security and Medicare are just a straight 15.3%. So that's easy. We can calculate that. It's the income tax part of it that gets really complicated, because our income tax laws are complicated. You might have 13 kids. You might give $15,000 a year to charity. You might have a $600,000 mortgage. You might have crazy high real estate taxes, or you could be the opposite. You could be single with no kids, have no mortgage, no real estate taxes, and give nothing to charity. And those, just those two examples would have wildly different tax numbers. So the tax is too personal and too complicated to just guess at. The Social Security is a straight formulation. It's just, we just calculated it. It's easy. I would venture to say that most of my truck driver clients that are in your situation end up paying most of their tax in the 10% bracket. That's the first tax bracket is 10%. Then when we go over that, the rest of the money gets taxed at 15, and then I think 18, and I don't keep them all memorized. So 25% of your gross check, if you don't want to screw around calculating per diem and Social Security and then trying to figure out what's left, if you did 25%, you're going to be pretty safe. If you do 30, you're going to be in great shape.
Outstanding. Because I figured out a couple years ago how to save money every week and not spend it. I just create another bank account and transfer the money that I've calculated out of each paycheck, put it in there, and then just keep putting it in there little by little.
That's perfect. That absolutely works. So just keep doing that, and you're going to be in good shape. Let's see. Get to another call here. Let's go to Arizona. Bill, welcome to the program.
Well, Kevin. Hey, I got two quick questions. One, I'm working as a company schmuck, but I'm called a contracted worker. I know I'm getting a 1099. In fact, I just got it the day before yesterday for this past year.
Okay, so you're in the same situation as the caller I just talked to.
Yes. Well, not completely. The way my boss runs me, there is no way I can use my logs to use per diem. What do I do?
Why not?
Because they are purely fictitious. And they
do not show the IRS
the time I've worked.
Well, so what? And I understand what you're thinking, but let me assure you, I've been doing tax returns for drivers and owner-operators since 1990. So what is that, 26 years now? I will tell you, in all that time, thousands of tax returns, I could count the audits that I had to go through, full-blown audits with clients on one hand. They're not that common. I know it's scary to think, and every now and then we hear about somebody, but normally a number is wrong, we forgot to claim some income on a form, that usually triggers a question from the IRS, we answer the question, we make things right, and they go away. Full-blown audits where they look at every single number on the tax return are rare, and they're really rare when you're making less than $75,000 a year, $100,000 a year. So the first thing is, we don't really have to worry about an audit all that much. The second thing is, when I did go through audits, there's nobody at the IRS who is going to look at a logbook for per diem reasons and turn it over to the DOT for compliance reasons. it's probably never happened in the history, you know, of anything. The two have nothing whatsoever to do with each other. So hold that thought. The music's playing. I'm going to get to a break, and we'll come back right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up here. We're heading into the final segment of the first hour. I'm looking at the questions right now. I am going to go ahead and start a second hour, and there is room. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, if you press 1 on your phone right now quickly, I'll be able to get to you. So, and at the end of this segment, I'm going to say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff. Don't hang up. We'll come back and do another hour. Here we go.
Highway east of Omaha, we can listen to the engine moaning at his one lone song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, 8888 Road Dog. I'm going to get back to the phone calls. I was talking with Bill in Arizona. So that's the first thing, Bill. Don't worry about it. Audits are rare. The IRS is never looking at that logbook for compliance. And you said it doesn't show all your work. Well, that may
no,
be.
It doesn't.
You may really have been out 350 nights, and your logbook only shows 300. So what would you rather get, a $15,000 deduction for the 300 nights or zero?
Yeah. Okay. Hadn't really thought about that. My second question, and it's more or less more of a favor, is there any chance that you would be willing to make available a list of places by category that you would recommend us to take our equipment to have work done?
No.
No. Okay.
And here's the reason. It's too short to make a list. Really, I wish I had a list. You know, I have, when it comes to engines, I have Pittsburgh Power. Hands down,
yes.
The only place, one of the very few places I would take my truck for engine work. The rest
yeah,
of my shops.
Yeah, anybody looks to your show, Morton Place, knows that.
Exactly. So we don't need to put that one on a list. The rest of my shops would be in Orlando, because that's where I ran my trucks for the last 14 years that I owned trucks, and I haven't been in Orlando since 2007, so all those shops are 8 years out of date for me, and things change. So I wouldn't even be, I could say if you're in Orlando, look up Action Mobile was the shop that I used for all my general work. I had a tire guy who ran around in one truck and did all my tire work, so it was just a really small shop. But I haven't dealt with those places in years. I know Action Mobile's still there. I still get lots of great feedback from people that I send down there. But that's about it. I mean, you know, for me, in order to give a recommendation, even to say here is a place to try, I guard my reputation and my recommendations pretty closely. I have to. That's kind of my thing. That's what I do. And I can't possibly recommend a shop that I don't go to anymore. And honestly, since I've been here in Portland, I've hardly had any work done. You know, I don't own vehicles that are having a lot of miles put on them every day anymore. The little bit of work that needed done on my tractor since I've been here, I did most of it. And the couple shops that I tried, I wasn't very happy with. So I certainly wouldn't recommend them.
Yeah.
So I wish I had a list.
No problem. I just thought, well, doesn't matter what I thought. I've got the mute point.
Yeah, so, you know, there are a couple other places around the country that, you know, I get really good feedback about. I've contacted them and talked to them, and a couple that I know, I don't know what's with, I think I have too much on my mind today because I'm drawing a blank on, there's DTI in Indianapolis. I know Dave really well. I would recommend them, and they do all the stuff we talk about here. So if you're looking for some place in the Midwest, DTI in Indianapolis, and, boy, there's a shop in Dallas with a crazy name, Diesel something, and I can't just not remembering the name right now. Maybe I'll try to look it up at a break. And I get great feedback about those guys, and I've talked to them a couple times at the truck show. They do all the stuff we talk about here. And I really like their shop as well. In fact, I probably need to formalize an arrangement with a couple of shops like that I just recommend here and there. But I get really good feedback. Like I say, I'm very careful about recommending things that I'm not currently using and have really personal experience with. All the products, those are companies that I've worked with for years. I've used the products. I've tested the products. I know they work. We get approached by companies constantly that want us to talk about their product or promote their product, or they want to pay us to be a sponsor, and we turn most of them down. Very seldom do we bring on a new product. I'm always excited when we do. There just aren't that many things I'm willing to recommend. Let's go to Texas. Fred, welcome to the program.
Yes, Kevin. Thank you for taking my call. I got two questions. The first one, I've got a 2010 Freightliner Cascadia with 1.2 million miles. Would it be okay to go ahead and install the FAST system and the OPS system?
Absolutely. And here's the order I would do it in, and I'll tell you why. I would put the OPS system on first and get an oil sample. That all kind of goes together because when you order the OPS, you're going to get about a year's worth of oil samples with the startup kit. And I want to see an oil sample to make sure we don't have any injector problems going on. Once in a while, if you've got a weak or a faulty injector, the FAST system can kind of make it worse. It doesn't cause the problem, but if it's there, it might. It doesn't always, but it might make it worse. So I like the idea of getting the OPS on, getting an oil sample, let's look at it, and then absolutely put the FAST on. Both of them are a really good thing to do for high-mileage engines.
Okay, great. My second question is, it's for my daughter. She used to work there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. My daughter used to work for UPS, and she's got an IRA in their account, but she's working for the state of Texas now. Where would it be best to roll over her IRA from UPS?
Anywhere would be better than leaving it there. There are lots of good reasons not to leave retirement accounts with companies when you leave. Is she willing to listen to or read a book?
Oh, yes.
Or would you? Okay. Then the book,
yes,
I recommended at the beginning of the show, Money, Master the Game by Anthony Robbins.
Okay.
Rather than just try to tell you, you know, I could say, well, take it to Fidelity or take it to here and open up a personal, that would be fine and you'd be okay. But honestly, if you hold off on this until you go through that book, you're going to get so much more information than I have time for here, or much easier to understand when you can take your time and go back and re-listen to something if you need to, or get the book and read it. You're going to learn so much more about what she could be doing financially, and it will specifically answer this question about what to do with her IRA as well.
Wow, excellent. I'll do that.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I love my listeners. I already got an answer to my question. The shop in Dallas that I was just drawing a blank on, Redneck Diesel. I told you it was an odd name. Great guys, though. Great work. I have not personally had my truck worked on down there, but I get tons of great feedback. I've spent time with those guys talking to them at the show. I love what they're about. So certainly give them a try. Let's go to, let me see. Oh, you know what? I just don't have enough time to do justice to another call. So I'm going to wrap this one up, and we will have to catch you back here next time. In the meantime, if you want to stay in touch with what we've got going on, and we've got a lot going on these days, a lot of great stuff coming up. I plan on making a lot of resources available to you this year. We're going to make a lot of those resources free. This is, we've kind of designated 2016 our year to give back. So we started off in January by releasing our free ebook and audio book and our free webinar, all about how to get started as an owner-operator, everything you need to know. And we make the webinar, the ebook, and the audiobook all free. And you can find those at letstruck.com. Now, my goal is to release a program like that every month. I am scrambling right now to finish February, but we're committed to creating some of those resources for you this year. So go to the website, letstruck.com. Bottom left corner, sign up for our newsletter. Sign up for the webinar right there on the homepage. And we'll let you know everything we've got going on. And, of course, keep listening to the show. We will see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work. And master the journey. Kevin Rutherford. All right, so we're going to head into a second hour here. Let me take a look at questions and see. Looks like we're in pretty good shape. If we get into the hour and it looks like I'm going to have some more room, I'll let you know. But right now it looks like we're good. So here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight. In fact, if you've got a question about anything at all, join us here on the show. I'll do my best to get you an answer. We're going to get to those calls and questions in just a minute. Speaking of questions, one of the things I've tried to explain over the years is that I can't answer questions that come in from all over the internet. Every once in a while, you know, my email gets out and I'll get flooded with calls in my or questions in my email. I get lots and lots of questions on Facebook, and I'm not even really on there anymore. People will post in a discussion asking me a question. The odds of me ever seeing that discussion, even when I was on Facebook, were slim to none. And I feel bad because, you know, they reached out to ask a question, and I can't possibly answer them. If I had one place where I could go to find all the questions, I would never have time to answer them all. It can't be done. But I will tell you, one of the things that I've been trying to do is we created a webinar this year, and my goal is this year to create a lot of resources to help people and make those resources easily available and free. So January's project was all about how to get started as an owner-operator. So we have a free webinar you can watch. It's about 45 minutes long. We have an ebook and an audiobook that if you go to the webinar, we're going to give you the ebook and the audiobook. We have a audio video workbook program that we sell in our store, and we have our CMC, which is a week-long business conference. If you follow that program, if you did all of that stuff, you are guaranteed to succeed. But at least get started. Go to the webinar. Now, one of the things that I'm doing is that in the webinar itself, you'll be able to ask a question. I can't answer them immediately, but they will go to my email. They're going to a special folder so I can find them all. And I'm attempting to answer as many of those as I can. Can't guarantee if you submit a question in the webinar that I'll be able to get you an answer, but I will. I'm devoting more time to answering those. And there's a reason for that. Lots and lots of people who ask me questions aren't really putting a whole lot of effort into it. They're on Facebook. They see me, oh, let me ask him a question. They shoot off a question. If you've gone to the webinar, if you've downloaded the book, I know you're more serious about this. So I will do my best to try to answer those. Again, I can't get to them all, and I will try to give you a couple tips so that you'll have a better chance of getting your question answered. I got a question this morning from the webinar, and it said, I want to be an owner-operator. What kind of a truck should I buy? What company should I lease to? What kind of trailer should I haul? And what part of the country should I run in to make the most money? That's why I wrote the book. Those questions, it would take a book to answer them. I can't possibly answer questions like that in email. So I appreciate you sending in questions, but think about the question. All of the questions he asked will be covered if he would just go through the material. Listen to the webinar, read the ebook, read the audiobook. Yes, you're going to have to invest in step two, $247 for our audio video workbook program. People tell me it has saved them $5,000 to $10,000 in mistakes and startup costs, so it's worth every penny. And at that point, if you still have questions, you're going to have better questions that I can answer. And I'm going to be more motivated to answer them because you're doing some of the work. When I get somebody who just says, tell me how to succeed as an owner-operator. You know, that's just being intellectually lazy. The information is there. I wrote it, and I gave it to you. And I can tell who reads before they ask the question. If you just look and say, oh, here's a guy who seems to know a lot about getting started. Let me ask him all these questions I have. I'm not going to answer. I've already answered. I wrote the book. I recorded the audio. I created the workbook. We've given you all those resources. Use those first. Then if you have a question and you submit it through the webinar, I will do my best to try to get as many of those answered as I can. To sign up for the webinar, you go to letstruck.com. You'll see it right there on the homepage. While you're there, you could sign up for our general newsletter. You'll find that sign up on the bottom left of that form, and you could also check out our other shows by looking for the Audio Road tab at the top of our homepage, and you can go in and listen to all of the shows we do here at Let's Truck. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's start off in Illinois. Clayton, welcome to the program.
Good day, Kevin. I've got
what can I help you with today?
Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Good. Hey, I got specs on a truck I want to run by you. I'm going to tell you, I'm a, I say a long time listener. I've been listening to you since I've been what they call an owner operator. I do what your least favorite thing is with the lease purchase, and I'm doing the best I can to get out of this since I met you. But anyway,
okay.
I got specs on a truck that I want to run by you and kind of get an opinion. It's a 2002 International Eagle 9900i. It's a 91-inch sleeper. It's got an American Road sleeper on, 2004 model. It's an 18-speed with 373 rears, 24.5 low-pro tires. It's got a 6NZ Cat, 550 horsepower. It's got a new radiator, new steers, and the drives on it are only about a year old, so they're fairly new. It's a 285-inch wheelbase. It's got a twin 150-gallon fuel tanks, and it's got a 2010 Carrier APU on it. The truck has got 992,000 miles on it. It's actually on the road now. I just talked to the guy this morning with it. He's wanting $35,000. The bonus that comes with this is, you know, he's leased to a carrier, and he's given me an opportunity, if I'm interested in buying the truck, to come and drive the truck, just drive for him, because he's going into another one anyway. He's going to park this one. And I can drive for him. And we talked about all the, you know, stuff with that, come along with that, but I can drive the truck until I decide to purchase. If I decide not to purchase it, I can stay there and continue to drive for him. But
okay.
If I find that, you know,
so,
I really like the truck or whatever, it's not going to be a lease purchase. I'm actually going to buy the truck from him.
Got it. All right. So let's talk about, I have a method I certainly didn't develop. It's very common for making decisions, and probably everybody has seen it. You get a piece of paper, you put a line down the middle on one side. Here's all the reasons I would do this. Here's all the reasons why I wouldn't. Whatever method you use. I also use some things called brain mapping and poster boards and all kinds of things to make, because this is a big decision. And we want to, you know, make an informed decision. So I would use some sort of a method where I got it down in writing. And I'll walk you through what I think are the pros and the cons. Let's talk about all the good stuff first. It's pre-emission. I'd love that. It's got a 6NZ Cat. Pretty hard to beat. Love that. The 18-speed isn't necessary, but it's not hurting anything. Gear ratios are good. I like those. Got new tires. I don't know what the rolling resistance is. That may be a plus or a minus. But with fuel prices where they are today, I'm not going to sweat that one too much. It's almost more of a non-issue right now. It's got a big sleeper. That could be really nice if that's what you're looking for and if that fits your operation. For example, there have been lots of operations. I would never consider this truck. I ran regional, short haul, moved containers around. No way would I want a sleeper like this. On the other hand, if I'm on the road all the time, lot of over the road, lot of miles, lot of being away from home, having a sleeper like this might be wonderful. So that one could be a plus or a minus, depending on your situation. Another big plus on this one. You get the ultimate test drive. You get to go work this truck and pull freight with it before you ever make a decision. That is a huge plus. In fact, I would put that at the top of the list for pluses, because that really is a big one. So let me get to a break. The music's playing. We'll come back and we'll continue on through our process of decision making here. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Thank you. welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I was talking with Clayton in Illinois, so we're going to get back to this. So, Clayton, I think that's probably the things I see as all positive or could be positive depending on your situation. Let's talk about the negatives. This is one of the models of trucks that can be really non-aerodynamic or it can be slightly more aerodynamic depending on how they configured it. If I remember right, this model was available with air cleaners under the hood or outside of the hood and stacks behind the sleeper or in front of the sleeper. And those two things can make a pretty big difference. Do you happen to know, are they internal and behind or external or and in front?
You know, I looked at it, Kevin, and I couldn't honestly give you that answer to that question. I can get the answer to that question. It does have external stacks, Nate. And they are, well, actually, you're talking about on the front of the cab or on the back of the cab?
In front of the sleeper, right behind the doors, though.
I believe that is where they're located, if I remember correctly.
Okay, because on that model, you could spec it with those tucked back behind the sleeper. And the same with the air cleaners. They could be the big external Vortox cans like a Classic, or they had an underhood system. Those two changes alone account for about a half mile per gallon. Today's fuel price, it's a factor. If fuel goes to $5 a gallon or $4 a gallon, it becomes a very big factor. So this isn't a really aerodynamic truck. Then we stretch out the frame, we put a big sleeper on it. We're losing a mile to even a mile and a half per gallon in potential because of the shape and size of this truck. So that, to me, is a pretty big downside. Doesn't mean it's an absolute no-go, but we just can't make anything positive out of that. That's just a negative. It just means it's going to cost us more money every year in fuel to run this truck. The other one for me that's kind of a negative really is price. I know there's value here, with all the modifications, with the APU. There's value here, but sometimes getting started, I'd much rather see somebody get in at the $15,000 range rather than the $35,000 range. There's a lot less risk in doing that. We could find a 2002 model truck with about the same miles, and we can find them in that $15,000 range. That doesn't mean this one's a bad deal. It has a lot of extras and a lot of modifications and upgrades, so I understand the price. Doesn't always mean I want to spend the price. Kind of like I think a Mercedes is worth every penny you pay for it, but a Kia is a better value. You know, it does the same thing. It gets you from point A to point B safely and, you know, reliably, and you spend a lot less money to do it. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with buying the more expensive option. It just means when we're starting up, that adds to our risk potential. And I try to do everything I can to get that risk potential down in the beginning. I don't see any other huge negatives. We're at 900,000 miles. Most 6NZs will go 1.2 or 1.3 before needing an in-frame. You're going to have some time to really get to know this truck. We could do oil samples. We could do a blow-by test. So even if we go to the low side of 1.2 million miles, you've got 2 to 3 years on this truck. So the mileage is... that's not a downside for me. I don't really see any other big downsides. So we had a pretty good list of upsides, couple downsides to think about. So this isn't one of those absolutes. You know, sometimes you hear people call and I say, if you don't buy that truck, I will. I mean, that's a clear indication that I love everything about the deal. Then you'll hear somebody start to tell me about a truck, and before they even finish the description, I'll tell them, not no, but hell no. That's a pretty clear indication that I would never buy that truck.
Well, I can tell you now, I'm in a lease purchase program. I'm wanting way out of this. I've been doing this for almost 4 years. And, I mean, it's just been one headache after the other. You're tied down. You can't do nothing. I wish I'd have met you on the air prior to doing this because, I mean, I've got money in the bank saved and can do all that.
Good.
It was just that, you know, the company I was with, they offered this deal. And, you know, it wasn't no out-of-money expense for me and whatever. And I'll tell you. The plus side to it is you can get into a brand new truck. The downside is, number one, I've got a 2014 Evolution. You know, it's got DD15, which I love. I mean, my 90 day and my, you know, even my 7 day fuel economy is excellent. I use your program to track that, and you know, I've tried to do all the things right. I've learned how to do the IFPA and. You know, and you've educated me on all that. You know, that I've talked to the company where this gentleman's got this truck leased to. I'm going to do some paperwork. They're willing to put me on there, you know, as far as leasing to them. If I want to go there, I can go other places. I got some pretty good information. Now, the answer to your question is I didn't think, but I did take two pictures of this truck. And the stacks are in front of the sleeper. And, I don't remember what the other one was. It's got one of the aerodynamic deals on top of the truck. It is kind of a flat top, but you know it's got one of the aerodynamic attachments that deflects the air.
One of the wings.
Trailer. Yes.
Yeah. They usually end up being worse. So we just need to put aerodynamics on the negative side of this because everything about the aerodynamics on this truck sound bad. This falls into a category of a truck I wouldn't buy, but it's not one that I would say absolutely don't buy. It just doesn't fit me. I just don't see why I would ever own a non-aerodynamic truck. And, you know, most of my operations, the big sleeper doesn't really bother me. I it would probably be nice. The big one here is the aerodynamics. That would be the big downside for me. And the price as a startup truck. So this one, I think you've got enough information to make a good decision based on what you want. I don't think that, well, I know, this is not a truck that's going to put you out of business. So if you decide that you really like this truck, you've got the money, I would go test drive it. I would go work for this guy. And I might even plan on at least a month. You'll really get to know the truck. So that, like I said, is a huge upside. Let's go to Texas. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon, Kevin.
What can I help you with today?
I got an oil sample I'd like you to take a look at.
All right. Tell me a little bit about the truck while I'm looking at this. What year?
It's a 2007 Century Class.
So we've got a 14-liter EGR. Okay.
Correct.
Looks like we're showing about 800,000 on the truck and about 144,000 miles on the oil itself. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. So, most everything looks good. I think the oil is starting to get a little stale.
Okay.
Nothing major. This is actually one of the better oil samples I ever see on an EGR engine. With 144,000 miles on the oil, most things look good. There's no fuel dilution, no real soot to talk about. Viscosity is holding up well. Base is holding up. The oil is starting to oxidize. That's understandable. It's old. Lead is building up a little bit. And we always, when we
That's
see lead starting
to...
Yeah, this is a low number. This is nothing to get too crazy about. We could be getting into some bearing wear. What I would do in this case, you've certainly got your money's worth out of the oil. I would do an oil change on this, and then let's kind of reset and see what happens to that lead next time.
Okay. I will get that done.
All right. So, yeah, nothing to worry about. It's actually a very good-looking sample for how many miles are on the oil. And you know, we always get new listeners, and I every time I take a call like that and say you have 145,000 miles on your oil, or once in a while I'll even say you have 400,000 miles on your oil. I know of two trucks right now that have over 600,000 miles without an oil change. All of those, by the way, using the OPS filter, the EcoPure filter system, and that's why they can do that. But I always get emails, oh, my God, I can't believe you told that guy, you know, it's okay to put all those miles on your oil. It is okay. I've been doing it since 1995. We have lots and lots of proof that it's okay. But there are times when we reset. But if we think about it, that is almost 10 times longer with that oil than most trucks are going. And at $200 an oil change, that's $2,000 savings. That's a nice return on investment for that filter system. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. We're going to head off to Iowa. Carl, welcome to the program.
How you doing today, Kevin?
Good.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I've
got a 99 Freightliner Classic with a 3406E engine in it. I've had to put two serpentine belts on it. I'm on my third one since the 1st of February. It keeps eating and chunking out the inside ridge on the belt itself, and I can't figure out where it doesn't look like it's rubbing anything. The tensioner seems to be okay. Just something in there is chewing that thing up. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
Yes. Now, are you replacing the belts yourself?
No, my mechanic, well, I did the last one. My mechanic did the one before that, but, anyway, so answer to your question, I guess, yes.
Okay. So a little of both. So, and I was wondering if anybody else has looked at the truck and if anybody else had an opinion, have all of the pulleys been inspected for, any surface problems that, you know, a nick, a burr somewhere that could start this? Because once you put a little nick in that belt, the damage is just going to spread. So sometimes it's something really minor that can do this.
Well, I've had a tensioner pulley replaced on it, but that was a year and a half ago, I guess, and I've not had any problems with the belt up to this point. So maybe one of those or something is, I mean, we've not actually taken and looked at all of the pulleys to see if there's any, I guess there would be burrs or something on the inside of them, you know.
Any kind of damage. So I would get the belt off, because trying to do it with the belt on, it's easy to miss something, because it doesn't have to be any big defect to start. It only takes a little nick, and then the tension and the speed of the belt just makes it spread. This almost always comes down to a couple things. One of those pulleys has a problem, either a defect on the surface, or it's way out of alignment, or it's wobbling. So we're really going to inspect every pulley that belt touches first. And then if you absolutely don't find anything, I would be looking at motor mounts.
Okay. There you go. That might could be the problem. Also, I'll check all that out and get back with you. Also, the guy before was the beginning of one of your, of the last show, I guess, was talking about places that you recommend to go get your truck fixed out on the road. You know, I don't know where he was. Was he in Florida or something? I found some apps. I mean, I'm all over the place, too, and I don't know where all these where a good shop is and a good shop isn't. But I found three or four apps in my app store that gives you a list of you can put in where you're at by zip code or town and or state, and it'll give you, you know, shops within 5 miles up to 150 miles, I guess. And
These are always a good place to start.
And they've been checked out, you know, by the app people, supposedly. But one of the app's names is Fine Truck Service. That's an app. And the My Dad Trucker place on there, if you're looking for something, you know, somebody to work on your truck, they've got a list. And Trucker Tools, TT. Those are the three apps that I have on my phone, and I look at all three of them. I mean, I was up in Ohio one night, and I couldn't keep coolant in my – it was just leaking coolant somewhere. So I got on there and called a shop that was 10 miles from me, far deeper in off of the Interstate 77 or 71, and I went down there the next morning, and I had a big old hole in the bottom of my reservoir. They ordered it, had it delivered out there, put it on, and real good customer service and all that stuff. But, I mean, you have to kind of feel your way around. I mean, sometimes...
Yeah, and that's a really good tip. And I will tell you, I'm familiar with all three of those apps and the companies that produce them. They're a great tool. But let me tell you, there's no real background checks being done. And that's not a criticism of the companies. Doing those kind of background check due diligence to say this is a good shop is virtually impossible. Those companies are just putting together lists, putting them into an app, using geolocation, which is, again, it's a great tool. Just don't put too much faith into the fact that these shops have been checked out. They really haven't been. And if they have been, it's a phone call to verify that they're still in business. And that's really about it. So you're on your own. But we're all on our own. That's how we find good shops. This is a great tool to say, okay, I'm here. I need somebody. And it's something to go to. We have tried over the years to get to build a directory of shops. The problem is, when we try to do it, we need feedback from people. I can't go personally visit every shop and have them do work and rate them and make sure their follow-up is good and their customer service is good. The shops we do recommend I've been working with for years or decades. But when we try to do this and get feedback from people, we get very little participation. People don't take the time to write good reviews nearly as often as they will take the time to write bad reviews, and we just don't get enough reviews overall to really put together much of a rating. I'd love to do a list. We've tried. We just haven't been very successful at it. Let's go to Texas. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Fair tax yesterday there, Kevin.
Absolutely. What's on your mind today?
Hey, just over here at this Landstar thing, just got the truck numbered up and everything like that. As I recall, at one point you had a couple of guys that were willing to mentor a new driver, and
yes.
I was kind of wondering if that's still open and how I would go about getting that service.
Yeah, and just so everybody's aware, this is our mentor program is completely voluntary. Nobody gets paid. We don't take any money. The people doing the mentoring don't take any money or expect any. And having said that, sometimes if everybody's busy, you know, you may not get a response right away, or you may sometimes we get an overwhelming response. We're just kind of the go-between. we're here to take the calls, try to help somebody as much as we can, and then sometimes pass them off to our mentor team. And the way it works is you just send an email to support@letstruck.com. And just kind of give us an idea of your situation and what you are looking for some help with specifically. And then we send out a blast email to all of our mentors, and they can read what it's all about, and your contact information will be in there. And then if somebody's interested, they get in touch with you. And we've had some great success stories. So I love when it works. But, again, it is fully voluntary and nobody gets paid, so we would love to expand that. I'd love to get more people that are interested in being mentors. So you can also, if you want to be a mentor, you can send us an email. We'll send you a form to fill out. We work on that program at the CMC every year because it's always nice to have it in person. But that's the first step for you. Just send us an email, support@letstruck.com. Give us some details, and we'll get it out to our mentor team.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. And let me know how it's going. Call me once in a while. Give me some feedback, and I know you will, about how it's working out for you. Because it is a program we would like to expand, and we'd like to do more of that. We'd like to give more back to the industry. We'd like to do it free. And we need help. We need mentors who are willing to jump in there and make a phone call or send an email or answer some questions. There's only so much we can do here, and we do have a great mentor team. I would like to do more of that. Let's go to Indiana. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Okay, I've got a question for you. Lost a transmission in a truck, and I picked up a donor truck that had a blown motor in it over the weekend, and I've always had
Hold that thought. The music is playing. I'm going to get to a break, and when we come back, we will get right to that question, so don't go away. In the meantime, check out the website, get signed up for our newsletter, check out our webinars, check out our podcast network. There's a lot going on. Click on everything you find on our homepage and see what happens. It's letstruck.com. We'll be right back with Kevin Ruff. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get back to some calls. Let's go back to Indiana. So, Jeff, go ahead.
Yes, I got the question I really have is I've always owned trucks with Eaton transmissions, and I picked up a donor truck over the weekend with a blown motor that's got a Rockwell transmission and kind of wanted to get your opinion on that transmission.
Do you happen to know which model?
It is a Direct 10.
Are you sure?
An R, yes. Yeah, I haven't called Freightliner and confirmed. It's a 99.
Okay, and the reason I say that is it's certainly not impossible that it's a Direct 10, but it's pretty rare. There's not a lot of them, so it's not nearly as common. What gear ratio do you have in this truck?
It's 279.
Oh, so you had a direct drive before then?
No, the donor truck is the Direct 10 with 279 rears.
Yeah. What's in your truck is what I'm trying to get to. What rear end ratio do you have?
Currently, it's a 355.
Yeah, that's you're going to have to swap the gears too, you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and your if it had a Rockwell transmission, it might have Spicer rear ends.
Okay.
So you may not be able to swap gear sets. You may have to swap entire axles.
Okay.
But that direct drive 10-speed will never work with your gears. I mean, you're going to be at 40 miles an hour, you're going to be at 1,500 RPM. So it's just
okay.
you've got to get the gear set switched over. However, if you can switch gears, if they are both eaten, you can switch gear sets over more than likely. Although, trying to remember, because I think 279 is not an eaten gear.
Yeah, it's a
I
Rockwell
just don't... rear end.
It's a Rockwell trans and a Rockwell rear end in the donor
end,
truck.
Right.
And I was going to do a complete swap of the drive line, but the Direct 10 kind of, it's going to be behind a Detroit Series 60. And in terms of fuel economy, what's kind of like an optimum speed for that setup?
I love this setup. I think this is a great setup, and your fuel economy will be good as long as you drive slow enough. Optimally, this is a 60-mile-an-hour truck. 55 to 60
okay.
is going to be your best fuel economy by far. But if you stay there, you're going to get great fuel economy. This is one of my favorite setups.
Okay, I currently drive about 62 now on a dedicated run, so...
You know, 62 isn't going to kill you. You will probably... If you were to track the difference between 60 and 62, you're probably talking, though, about 3 or 4 tenths of a mile per gallon. You're going to see a difference, but it's not going to be horrible. That Series 60 likes running around 14, even 1450 isn't going to hurt anything. So 62 is doable, and like I say, this is a good setup. So I think you got a winner there. Let's go to Missouri. Russ, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. You had a caller yesterday that was having a problem with their IFTA on their company, and you
yes.
suggested that she get a U.S. DOT number?
Correct.
Okay. Well, that process will cost right at $1,000 to do both.
Is that having... somebody else do it for you, or is that just the fees for filing things?
That's the fees. Now, you can go through OIDA or a third party, and the cost is still about the same. However,
okay.
if she wants to go through the state of Kansas, they get $300 of that fee, and you have to go to a 2-day seminar for them to educate you on how they do things. Now, the downside.
I think I'd rather just pay somebody and let them do it.
Right. Well, the downside is the process takes 30 to 45 days, and whatever equipment she's putting that number on cannot be on the road until they receive everything.
Well, it can be on the road leased to somebody else.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. So she
yeah.
was currently leased, so she can stay
right.
leased.
Right.
Hopefully the company stays in business and you know, they don't get shut down for some reason. That's why
exactly.
we're doing this. But that's good information. She needs to start as soon as possible because... she's going to have 30 to 45 days before
right.
she could leave this. Now, on the other hand, as long as she starts the process, if this company goes out of business tomorrow, she could release to somebody else. Right. You know, so you wouldn't be just dead in the water. But what you're saying is before that DOT number is issued, it's going to be 30 to 45 days.
Exactly.
And you are talking about just a DOT number, not authority,
no,
correct?
That is right. The DOT number,
okay,
and IFTA.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. Those
Perfect.
Two processes take 30 to 45 days.
That's what we were looking
like
for.
Said,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, she can go call OIDA Compliance Department, and they will help her with all the paperwork.
You know, and that's my advice. I do not like dealing with government agencies, and I've had people say, oh, that's stupid, you can do it yourself and save all this money. I really don't care. My time is
exactly.
worth more, and my sanity is worth more than trying to deal with people at these agencies, especially when you don't know what you're doing. If you've never done the process before, it's 10
right.
times as hard. Give it to somebody
exactly.
who does this every day. They know all the tricks. They know all the shortcuts. They'll get this stuff moved right through.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's why I say she can call OIDA, the compliance department. They'll walk her through the whole process. They already had
Perfect.
The paperwork in-house. You know, they do it every
yep.
day.
Perfect. I appreciate the feedback. Thank you for that. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I'm looking. ELDs are coming around the corner. They finally passed it. I've heard that it's pre-2000. I've also heard that it's the manufacture date on a truck determines whether it's pre-2000 or not. And I have a 2000 Volvo 780, but it was manufactured in April of 99. And I'm like, what, am I exempt or not? Do you know the answer on that?
I do, but you're going to have to go do a little more digging because I don't have my notes right in front of me. It is, I think it's the ninth digit, and that's where I might be wrong on which number in the vehicle identification number in the VIN, there is a specific digit, and that is the digit that they are using to determine whether or not it's exempt from ELDs. Now, this could change, and the reason I say that is because if I'm reading all this right, their logic makes no sense. Because the idea is that the reason they're exempting 99 and older is because the technology of the ECM, the same as 2000 and newer, and it makes it harder to write standards and have devices that cover everything. So they just decided to exempt the older trucks. But the year of the truck has nothing to do with this. It's the ECM. So if that's the case, then gliders should be exempt if their engine is older than 99. But if we go by the VIN number specifically, that's not going to tell us what the engine was. So the way they wrote it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me, and I'm wondering if somebody's going to catch this and make a change. We should be looking at the engine only when it comes to whether or not the truck is exempt, and they don't seem to be doing that. So
yeah,
I don't know if I have that digit
government.
Right. I know. I think it was the ninth digit. But I don't have my notes right in front of me. So that you're going to have to do a little more digging, but we're looking for a digit in your VIN number that will tell you whether or not your truck is going to be exempt or not. I'm all out of time. We'll do it again next show. We'll see you then. In the meantime, be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
All right.
right, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. I'll give you a quick heads up. Tomorrow, Tuesday, we will be doing an hour of Pittsburgh Power and an hour of general questions. On Wednesday, we'll have an hour of Destination Health, an hour of general questions, and then at 4 o'clock Eastern time on Wednesday, we'll be doing a special podcast all about brakes, brake maintenance, brake questions, brake stroke adjustment, everything brakes. That's a special podcast on Wednesday at 4 o'clock Eastern time. So join us for all of those. Thanks, and we'll see you then.